You don't mean to live there?
Yes, I do.
But, my dear girl, it's an immense house, and will take a power of money to keep it in order. The garden and orchard alone need two or three men. And farming isn't in Bear's line, I take it. He'll try his hand at it there, if I propose it. And you expect to live on the produce of the place? Well, that sounds paradisiacal, but you'll find it desperate hard work. The crop we are going to raise is a profitable one. And Joe laughed. Of what is this fine crop to consist, ma'am? Boys, I want to open a school for little lads, a good, happy, home-like school, with me to take care of them and Fritz to teach them. There's a truly Joeyan plan for you. Isn't that just like her? Cried Laurie, appealing to the family, who looked as much surprised as he. I like it, said Mrs. March decidedly. So do I, added her husband, who welcomed the thought of a chance for trying the Socratic method of education on modern youth. It will be an immense care for Joe, said Meg, stroking the head of her one all-absorbing son. Joe can do it, and be happy in it. It's a splendid idea. Tell us all about it, cried Mr. Lawrence, who had been longing to lend the lovers a hand, but knew that they would refuse his help. I knew you'd stand by me, sir. Amy does, too. I see it in her eyes, though she prudently waits to turn it over in her mind before she speaks. Now, my dear people, continued Joe earnestly, just understand that this isn't a new idea of mine, but a long-cherished plan. Before my Fritz came, I used to think how, when I'd made my fortune and no one needed me at home, I'd hire a big house and pick up some poor, forlorn little lads who hadn't any mothers and take care of them and make life jolly for them before it was too late. I see so many going to ruin for want of help at the right moment. I love so to do anything for them. I seem to feel their wants and sympathize with their troubles, and, oh, I should so like to be a mother to them. Mrs. March held out her hand to Joe, who took it, smiling, with tears in her eyes, and went on in the old enthusiastic way, which they had not seen for a long while. I told my plan to Fritz once, and he said it was just what he would like, and agreed to try it when we got rich. Bless his dear heart, he's been doing it all his life, helping poor boys, I mean. Not getting rich. That he'll never do. Money doesn't stay in his pocket long enough to lay up any. But now, thanks to my good old aunt, who loved me better than I ever deserved, I'm rich. At least I feel so, and we can live at Plumfield perfectly well if we have a flourishing school. It's just the place for boys. The house is big, and the furniture strong and plain. There's plenty of room for dozens inside, and splendid grounds outside. They could help in the garden and orchard. Such work is healthy, isn't it, sir? Then Fritz can train and teach in his own way, and Father will help him. I can feed and nurse and pet and scold them, and Mother will be my standby. I've always longed for lots of boys and never had enough. Now I can fill the house full and revel in the little dears to my heart's content. Think what luxury! Plumfield, my own, and a wilderness of boys to enjoy it with me. As Jo waved her hands and gave a sigh of rapture, the family went off into a gale of merriment, and Mr. Lawrence laughed till they thought he'd have an apoplectic fit. "I don't see anything funny," she said gravely, when she could be heard. "Nothing could be more natural or proper than for my professor to open a school, and for me to prefer to reside on my own estate." "She is putting on airs already," said Laurie, who regarded the idea in the light of a capital joke. "But may I inquire how you intend to support the establishment? If all the pupils are little ragamuffins, I'm afraid your crop won't be profitable in a worldly sense, Mrs. Bear." "Now don't be a wet blanket, Teddy. Of course I shall have rich pupils also. Perhaps begin with such altogether. Then, when I've got a start, I can take a ragamuffin or two, just for a relish. Rich people's children often need care and comfort as well as poor. I've seen unfortunate little creatures left to servants, or backward ones pushed forward, when it's real cruelty. Some are naughty through mismanagement or neglect, and some lose their mothers. Besides, the best have to get through the hobbledehoy age, and that's the very time they need most patience and kindness. People laugh at them and hustle them about, try to keep them out of sight, and expect them to turn all at once from pretty children into fine young men. They don't complain much, plucky little souls, but they feel it. I've been through something of it, and I know all about it. I've a special interest in such young bears, and like to show them that I see the warm, honest, well-meaning boys' hearts, in spite of the clumsy arms and legs and the topsy-turvy heads. I've had experience, too, for haven't I brought up one boy to be a pride and honor to his family? I'll testify that you tried to do it, said Laurie, with a grateful look, and I've succeeded beyond my hopes. For here you are, a steady, sensible businessman, doing heaps of good with your money, and laying up the blessings of the poor instead of dollars. But you are not merely a businessman. You love good and beautiful things, enjoy them yourself, and let others go halves, as you always did in the old times. I am proud of you, Teddy, for you get better every year, and everyone feels it, though you won't let them say so. Yes, and when I have my flock, I'll just point to you and say, "There's your model, my lads." Poor Laurie didn't know where to look. For man though he was, something of the old bashfulness came over him as this burst of praise made all faces turn approvingly upon him. "I say, Joe, that's rather too much," he began, just in his old boyish way. "You have all done more for me than I can ever thank you for, except by doing my best not to disappoint you. You have rather cast me off lately, Joe, but I've had the best of help, nevertheless. So if I've got on at all, you may thank these two for it." And he laid one hand gently on his grandfather's white head, the other on Amy's golden one, for the three were never far apart. "I do think that families are the most beautiful things in all the world," burst out Joe, who was in an unusually uplifted frame of mind just then. "When I have one of my own, I hope it will be as happy as the three I know and love the best. If John and my Fritz were only here, it would be quite a little heaven on earth," she added more quietly. And that night, when she went to her room, after a blissful evening of family councils, hopes, and plans, her heart was so full of happiness that she could only calm it by kneeling beside the empty bed always near her own and thinking tender thoughts of Beth. It was a very astonishing year altogether, for things seemed to happen in an unusually rapid and delightful manner. Almost before she knew where she was, Jo found herself married and settled at Plumfield. Then a family of six or seven boys sprung up like mushrooms and flourished surprisingly, poor boys as well as rich. For Mr. Lawrence was continually finding some touching case of destitution and begging the bears to take pity on the child, and he would gladly pay a trifle for its support. In this way the sly old gentleman got round proud Jo and furnished her with the style of boy in which she most delighted. Of course it was uphill work at first, and Jo made queer mistakes, but the wise professor steered her safely into calmer waters, and the most rampant ragamuffin was conquered in the end. How Jo did enjoy her wilderness of boys, and how poor dear Aunt March would have lamented had she been there to see the sacred precincts of prim, well-ordered Plumfield overrun with Toms, Dicks, and Harrys. There was a sort of poetic justice about it, after all, for the old lady had been the terror of the boys for miles round, and now the exiles feasted freely on forbidden plums, kicked up the gravel with profane boots unreproved, and played cricket in the big field where the irritable cow with the crumpled horn used to invite rash youths to come and be tossed. It became a sort of boys' paradise, and Laurie suggested that it should be called the Bear Garten, as a compliment to its master and appropriate to its inhabitants. It never was a fashionable school, and the professor did not lay up a fortune, but it was just what Jo intended it to be, a happy, home-like place for boys who needed teaching, care, and kindness. Every room in the big house was soon full. Every little plot in the garden soon had its owner. A regular menagerie appeared in barn and shed, for pet animals were allowed. And three times a day Jo smiled at her Fritz from the head of a long table lined on either side with rows of happy young faces, which all turned to her with affectionate eyes, confiding words, and grateful hearts. Full of love for Mother Bear. She had boys enough now, and did not tire of them, though they were not angels by any means, and some of them caused both Professor and Professorin much trouble and anxiety. But her faith in the good spot, which exists in the heart of the naughtiest, sauciest, most tantalizing little ragamuffin, gave her patience, skill, and in time success. For no mortal boy could hold out long with Father Bear shining on him as benevolently as the sun, and Mother Bear forgiving him 70 times 7.